Welcome to The Bard and Bible, a conversational devotional about scripture, life, and ministry from the perspective of a tabletop missionary still trying to figure out what those words actually mean when you string them together. There's a seat by the fire over there, and it looks like things are just about to get started. Tonight's tale, Role and Ritual. Greetings, friends. I'm Mike Perna, your resident dwarf bard, here to welcome you to The Bard and Bible. Please mind the mess. We found ourselves in a bit of a hectic situation with the holiday and all, and especially with all the upcoming events we've got going on. We've just been a little short-staffed. We had an adventuring party in here earlier. There was some mention about a mimic. Then everything got a little weird. I think they're still finding bits of the halfling about the room. Okay, in all seriousness, guys, I had this thought of what I wanted to talk about this week, what I wanted to address, and it really got me thinking. Like, this is less about gaming. We do make the gaming references. It's where Bard and Bible came from and all that. But this one's going to be a little bit more character-y, kind of gamey than some of the other ones we have, mostly because I was thinking about characters from my past and things that I've played, and it doesn't help the fact that this is a Sunday when I'm recording, and so being Sunday and having spent a good portion of my morning and really a good portion of my whole day kind of in this understanding of how we try to interact with God, how we as human beings try to connect with God. So there is going to be a story of one of my first characters, at least in my resurgence of D&D. It's not my first D&D character, but my comeback tour. He's actually also my first Drogon. So to kind of set things up, I do want to tell you a story about Drogon. This one's Drogon Lightforge. Drogons and I kind of go like George Foreman names his kids. For some reason, I always feel compelled to call them Drogon. But this particular one was actually a cleric. Specifically, he was a cleric of Kord. And because of the fact that he was one of the first clerics I ever played, he pretty much... I didn't know how to assign his stats. I didn't know how to make him good at what he did. So I just kind of made him something. He was certainly unique. And... One of the reasons that he was unique was the fact that as I was looking through the book, I'm like, okay, so the important thing is wisdom. He's supposed to have a high wisdom, but he didn't have a high intelligence. And I go, ah, that's fine. It'll be my dump stat. And I forgot that among the many things that a character's intelligence informs, religion is directly impacted by your character's intelligence. So it kind of became this thing with this particular rendition of dwarf named Drogon, that Drogon was really good when it came to the practical applications of his faith. He was really good at healing. He could turn undead like a champ. But if you actually asked him about the whys, wherefores, and what have yous of practicing his faith, the warlock in the party knew more about how to properly worship Kord than Drogon did. Now, you might be wondering, why do I care so much about this cleric and about how any of this has to do with any kind of devotional thought? But thinking about this old character and thinking about what kind of came about and some of the stories that got told through the course of playing him, I realized something across every cleric or paladin or anything I've ever played in any kind of role-playing game since him. How often do we actually bother to put the rituals of faith, the actual ceremonies and feast days and all that stuff, how much do we actually bother to put any of the religious practices of a character's faith into our games? obviously we do like the I do this to heal him, or I do this to, you know, make X happen. But when you really think about it, you know, how many times do we say, like, oh, I'm going into a town, the very first thing I do is go to the local temple to my deity to make things happen. I need to go and do my my proper cleansing rituals or whatever. We don't do that. At least the gaming experiences that I've had have never done that. I've had plenty of religious characters in games, but I've never really had anybody who gave any kind of attention to the day-to-day tenets of how they worship their deity. The closest thing I ever got was back in the day when I was playing in D&D 3.5, and I had to make sure that I used my deity's preferred weapon. Everything else just kind of was, yeah, sure, it's a thing. It's a thing, we do that, it's fine. So I wanted to take a minute and just to, at least for my own kind of peace of mind, kind of think through the nature of ritual, the nature of the day-to-day stuff that we do when we try to connect to God. And so I do want to take a little bit here at the front end to kind of focus the thought, to define the term of ritual, and to really kind of look at exactly what it looks like to perform ritual as described in the Bible. Now, granted, there's a lot of things I could do for that, but I have one particular kind of in mind. The definition of ritual that I discovered was a religious or solemn ceremony consisting of a series of actions performed according to a prescribed order. I think that's a solid definition, because I like the fact that it's religious or solemn. Like, it could be both, but it should be at least one. We think of ritual always being this kind of religious context, whether it's Christian or other. There's this idea of, I go to a place to do a thing to honor, you know, whichever god that particular house of worship is dedicated to. But, you know, we often talk about even simple things like, I think of sports and the things, the way that people follow sports, like we're in the playoffs, and so I don't change my socks until we lose, because it's just the thing I do to kind of push forward and do this thing. It ranges from the solemn and the deep and the profound to the silly, and we use the same word in both cases. I think the key thing here is this idea of a series of actions performed according to a prescribed order. X happens, and then Y happens, and then ultimately we get to Z. And I think it's a good starting place. It's a foundation upon which we can kind of discuss this idea. And I wanted to get a good example and to kind of typify what I'm talking about here when it comes to the Bible. So obviously the very first thing that I thought of, it goes without saying, is the book of the Bible that's literally written to the priesthood. Now, I could talk about Leviticus till the cows come home, and in fact I will, because right here at the very beginning of the book of Leviticus, we have a description of exactly the kind of thing that we're talking about here. When talking about the burnt offerings, it says right here in verse 3, if his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, he shall offer a male without blemish. He shall bring it to the entrance of the tent of meeting, that he may be accepted before the Lord. He shall lay his hands on the head of the burnt offering, shall be accepted for him to make atonement for him. Then he shall kill the bull before the Lord, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall bring the blood and throw the blood against the sides of the altar. And I'm just gonna stop. It goes on for quite a while, describing this happens, then this happens, then this happens. And if that's not enough, in verse 10, we kind of pick it up again. It says, if his gift is a burnt offering from the flock, from the sheeps or the goats, he shall bring, and it goes on again. So if it's a cow, you do this. If it's a lamb or a goat, you do this. If it's this, you do this. This is the very first chapter. This is the opening gong of the book of Leviticus. It says, in order to worship God, you do this. And I think sometimes we do ourselves a disservice by getting rid of some of this stuff. Now, obviously, you know, being a Christian, living in the age of grace and living in a post kind of temple situation, I'm not saying that we do ourselves a disservice by not offering up cows in front of our churches to provide atonement. We don't need that. What I'm saying is that I think that when we try to get rid of ritual, or we try to distance ourselves from ritual, I think we really do kind of screw up kind of the nature of worship. Now, granted, this might not look the same way for everybody, but I think that there's something to having a, this is what I do, and this is how I worship. I did kind of go back to kind of doing my pre-B&B post in our Facebook group called The Tavern. I skipped it the last episode, but I wanted to get back into it here because I know for a fact that we've got some people, again, who come from vastly different faith expressions. And so I said, what does it mean? What does the word ritual mean to you? And what does that bring up? And we got a couple. You know, we didn't get a lot of responses, but the ones we got are quality. And I really want to make sure that I bring these up because as a guy who is so low church these days, and I'll explain a little bit about that and about my own kind of situation here. But as a guy who is so divorced from what the typical reaction to ritual is, I wanted to get other voices involved when discussing it because I think that there are people out there who really do see ritual for what it is and the value that it has. One of the things that got posted was Craig Falvo. And again, Craig, I've never had to pronounce your last name. So if it's not Falvo and it's a different pronunciation, I apologize. This is what happens when our relationship is built over texts. He brought up a couple things. One, that he practices Tai Chi, which is a really cool kind of physical act that focuses him and kind of gets him, I don't know, kind of puts him in a place that he can kind of step away from the anxiety of his day. And as somebody who both directly and indirectly has had to deal with anxiety before, anything that you can do that kind of helps you step back from that. And Tai Chi is I've had a number of friends in the past that have practiced Tai Chi, and it's very controlled movement. It is super controlled. And so every movement, every tiny motion of your body is thought through and focused on and intense. So I could easily see how doing that, how performing these same motions over and over again provides that space to process existence. But that wasn't the only thing that Craig brought up. Craig also brought up Orthodox iconography and how he had a couple icons where he lived. And I actually, in seminary, had a chance to study iconography and the place of it. If you have no idea what I'm talking about with iconography, if you've ever gone to a Greek Orthodox church, I believe Russian Orthodox as well, but I haven't been to a Russian Orthodox, so I'm kind of speaking from ignorance there. But I know in Greek Orthodox churches, you have images that you pray to, but you're not actually praying to the image itself. You're using that image as a focus to who you're actually praying to. And that understanding, that opportunity to sit and to listen to that really spoke volumes to me because I had always said, okay, obviously if you're praying to a painting or a statue or whatever, that sounds like idol worship and it sounds like weird and I'm not cool with it. But when I heard about the process and the thought and the understanding behind this practice, I was able to see how it can be just a beautiful thing. Because much like that idea of Tai Chi, where you're focusing on the movement, and that focus on the movement allows you to not focus on all the other things and get to what you're trying to do, and it allows you to process life in a healthier kind of way. The iconography, I think, is actually pretty tied to it. So it was neat that he brought both up at the same time, because this idea of iconography says, I'm focusing my attention in this place, at this icon, which reminds me and points me towards what I'm actually praying to. And I came out of my experience with the Greek Orthodox Church saying, that is really fascinating. It's really not for me. I can't make that connection for me personally. I can't move past I'm praying to this thing. I get stuck there. But I had this whole new appreciation for the use of this ritual to focus our attention to the Almighty. And it was a cool, it's a cool moment to have with these people who are doing things that I think are weird and not, that then don't sit well to me, but to get that perspective on how that works and how it doesn't contradict. It's just a way to flow, as it were. And I think kind of in line with that, there was another response from Thomas Kolar. And Thomas brought up, I'm literally quoting, I'm sorry if you read this on the post in the tavern, but this quote is so perfect and so at the heart of what I wanted to do in this episode that I warned him. I warned him that I was going to quote him directly, because this is so much what I wanted to share with you guys and what God is teaching me, is that he said, ritual is how our mundane reality can interact with the divine reality. We can not only reenact events of salvation history, but in a sense, enter into them. And this is particularly interesting because this also kind of brings up this idea that ritual can speak to people differently, because Thomas is coming from a perspective of he is a devout Catholic man. I grew up in the Catholic Church myself, and I remember those rituals. It's still ingrained in me. Like if you put me in a Catholic church, I still know all the things that you do and when you do them and why you do them. For me, I didn't, again, it's much like the iconography. For me, I've always stopped at the action. But what Thomas is doing here and what Craig is doing here is that they're realizing that the ritual itself is not the thing. The prescribed order, the prescribed order of actions leading to a thing. It's not the actions that are the focus here, because I can do all those actions. I can literally do every one of them, and it will not hit me. It will not strike me. But these guys, they step into this, and they are having this whole new appreciation for their place in the order of things. That, as Thomas put it, like, we are stepping out of our mundane reality and into the divine reality. And when ritual is done right, that's exactly what it should do. Because it's not about just the actions. Yeah, I mean, in a dictionary definition sense of the word, it's about the actions. But the sense of what ritual should be and what the context of the word is that it's a series of actions that lead to something. And when it comes to faith, it should lead to you being drawn towards God. Now, this is a perfect opportunity for me to say things like, quote, 1 Corinthians 13, if I speak in the tongues of men and angels but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. I can bring out Micah 6:8 again and talk about how the people were like, oh, can we do this? Or what worship should we do? Or what oils should we sacrifice and cows and all that? And God said, literally, you just need to be decent people. I could cite all of that right here. Because and rightfully so, saying that if a ritual can be empty, it can be just a series of actions that you do just because you're supposed to do them. And really, that's actually part of why, for me personally, I've been saying throughout this whole episode that I've been kind of systematically stepping back from a lot of the traditional understanding of ritual. because of the fact that throughout my faith experience, a lot of those things have become empty. I did them because I was supposed to do them. I grew up, like I said, the same church that has led Thomas to these amazing connections with God and this great deep spiritual experience led me to basically cringe every time I do read and response, cringe every time I am in a very liturgical setting, because I did it for 17 years, never believing any of it, but I just did it because you just do it. That's what it is. It was empty. It was hollow. And that that is ritual done poorly. But I even this guy who balks at the idea of ritual, even I, when I think about it and when I thought about it in preparation for talking to you guys tonight, I have ritual. Several of you have probably remember me talking about the Sunday morning experiment. Now, it has had a drastic change since when I first started it, hence why I call it an experiment. But the short version of what it looks like these days is that I sit in the lobby. I sit in the lobby, and my intention is to talk to people. To talk to people who are, you know, leading worship, but who have stepped out into the lobby to kind of catch a breather because, you know, I don't know if you've ever led worship before. It can be when you're throwing yourself out there in worship and trying to get people to that place where they're connecting with God. It takes a lot out of a person, and sometimes you just want to come out and get a glass of water. And so I'll talk to them. I'll talk to the greeting team. I'll talk to other people who are just kind of milling about, because I'm discovering that I need back and forth to connect with God. I need to connect with God's people. I don't need to just sit and absorb. The act of being on a Sunday morning does not do anything for me. And it doesn't connect me to God either. But still, even in this place, I have ritual. I come in. I sit in generally the same spot every Sunday morning. I bring my bag with me every Sunday morning, and from that bag I produce my Bible, my journal, and whatever book I'm reading at the time. I start my Sunday morning experience by praying and asking God, what do you want me to do here today? Who am I here to talk to? I pray that you would bring whoever that is to me, or bring me to them, that I could have the interaction with them that you would have me have today. I'll often then sit down with my journal and I'll say, what has happened? I'm not an active journaler. I don't do it every day, but on these Sundays, I make a point to sit and to process my week, process my morning, and I journal. That's not even something I do regularly. So again, one could argue that this is even part of my ritual on a Sunday morning. It's my special time, my prescribed action, as it were. So even without the quote-unquote, you know, formal acts of ritual, I've created my own. I've created that set of actions I do to draw closer to God and his people. So it's funny to get there, get from a place where I started, when I started thinking about my goofy, quite frankly, just drunken goof of a cleric who didn't know his own ritual, and how that brought me to this place where I realized that so many times we take these things for granted when we should be coming to an understanding that the things that we do, the actions that we take, should be the kind of things that draw us closer to God and each other. If they're not drawing us closer to God and to each other, they are just a set of things we do. But when we take that time to put that weight behind them, they become something truly beautiful. They become not empty action, but a powerful movement to stepping into the divine. And I pray right now that you find that place, whether it looks traditional, whether it is found in liturgy and the Book of Common Prayer, whether it is in praying before an icon as you bring yourself toward God. As there's all these different ways that people from different denominations and different geographies, no matter what your ritual looks like, I pray that you find one that draws you closer to God and to his people, and that you do not settle for empty sets of actions. Because you are a dwarf bard, and you should not dare let anyone think you suboptimal. And part of that means that your time should not be devoted to anything that is just an empty waste of time, especially time set aside to be with God. I wish you a good night, great stories, and I look forward to the next time we get together here at the Bard and Bible. I know I try to open up these episodes with cool little story kind of things, but I'm not kidding when I said that I am exceptionally busy right now, and it's all good stuff. So if you're listening to this and it's anytime remotely in the vicinity of when it originally airs, and you happen to be of the praying sort, I would ask that you would pray for me as we go into these next couple weeks, because literally a few days from when I wrap this up, I'm going to be speaking at the Game Church Academy, where I'm talking about the power of games and physically being in the same room with the people you're playing with. The following week, we're actually going to have TavernCon, our annual fundraiser, to allow us to keep doing stuff like Bard and Bible. So if you find the time, please send up a prayer and ask God to help us as we continue to do this work in this ministry. I hope you appreciate the work that we do, and I look forward to bringing more of it to you in the weeks to come.